Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and I have no guests this week, so I'm doing this by myself this time. Two of the biggest things happening this week are actually happening today. One is the verdict in human rights activist Ayub Titiev's trial in Chechnya on a marijuana possession charge that he says is baseless. Titiev says the drugs were planted on him, and his group, the Moscow-based Memorial, says the trial is part of an effort by Kremlin-backed leader Ramzan Kadyrov to remove any semblance of human rights activism from Chechnya. We talked about Titiev's trial last time, and the judge is actually reading the verdict now, or was when I left the newsroom, and it looks like it's going to take several hours, possibly even stretching into another day. So I'm not going to discuss it this time around. I will note that the prosecution has asked the judge to find Titiev guilty and sentence him to 4 years in prison. The maximum sentence for the crime he's charged with is 10 years. So we'll see how that plays out either today or possibly even tomorrow. Obviously, it's a big trial for Chechnya and for Russia, and it'll be interesting to see. So today is March 18th, and on March 18th, 2014 was when Putin signed the agreement that the Kremlin says made Crimea part of Russia. The deal was ratified by the Russian Parliament 3 days later. But like the March 16th referendum that Moscow organized in Crimea ahead of the agreement, the vast majority of countries do not recognize it as valid. 5 years after the takeover, I want to talk a little bit about what it has meant for Russia, both good and bad, in this period of time. Quite a bit has been written on this subject, and I want to focus on a couple of things. One interesting write-up was Simon Sarajan, founder of the Russia Matters Project at Harvard, took a look at whether Putin's gamble, as he called it, has paid off. From my reading of it, he finds that by one measure it has paid off, at least in Putin's eyes, because it advanced what Sarajan calls, quote, one vital national interest for Russia as seen from the Kremlin, unquote, which is to basically stop NATO from getting closer to Russia. I mean, one of the reasons that that actually Putin, I believe, cited and, you know, for when he sort of admitted to taking over Crimea and admitting sending troops in was the idea that NATO could eventually get hold of the Black Sea Fleet base in Sevastopol in Crimea. So that's obviously, it does seem like clear that that was a factor motivating Russia's actions. So it's similar to the way the fear or the concern in the Kremlin about potential NATO expansion into more former Soviet republics was a motive, key motive in Russia's intervention or invasion of Georgia in 2008. So Sarajan writes that Russia's takeover of Crimea damaged several other interests, though, namely Russia's own economic development and the chances of forging constructive relations with other former Soviet republics and with the West. Clearly, the takeover of Crimea has done damage to these interests. In terms of Russia itself and public opinion, the bump in popularity that Putin enjoyed after the takeover has flattened out quite a bit. I think most polls show that, in general, Russians still approve of the takeover of Crimea. The idea that Crimea is part of Russia in their eyes. But one interesting result from a poll by the Public Opinion Foundation, or FOM, which is state-supported, and was released last week, it said the proportion of Russians who said the takeover of Crimea was equally good and bad for Russia, or brought both good things and bad things to Russia, was 39%. And that's much higher than it was in previous years in the same or similar polls. It's also the same percentage, 39%, as said in this poll, that the takeover brought mostly good things. So those numbers are now equal, according to this poll, showing that, you know, more Russians than before are saying, well, look, this, you know, as these analysts are saying, look, this brought us some bad things as well. And then in the same poll, 7% said it brought mostly bad things. So that and the rest, I think it was 15%, had trouble answering. So you have almost 50% saying either good and bad equally or bad. So that's a change, certainly. Now, in terms of the economy, you know, there's some clear things. I think Bloomberg has had reports both last year and this year about the indicating that the sanctions that were imposed, you know, in part over Crimea's seizure by Russia, and in part over other things, have decreased Russia's GDP by several percentage points. I'm not sure exactly whether, I think it was 10 percentage points, but that might include also the effects from the oil price drop. But in general, the sanctions have, in other words, they've made Russia's economy, they've slowed the growth of Russia's economy and lopped off several percentage points over from what it could have been without or would have been without the Western sanctions. And you'd also see signs that there are people who are saying, I mean, Alexei Kudrin is one, you know, who says we really need to try to do something to rebuild relations with the West, you know, in part for economic reasons. And just kind of segue from that, Leonid Bershidsky, who's a Bloomberg opinion columnist, wrote a couple of days ago that the biggest cost for Putin in terms of Crimea and the intervention in Ukraine has come not in the form of Western sanctions or decreased trade with Ukraine, but in bargaining power, basically on the geopolitical stage. He writes that immediately after the seizure of Crimea, quote, geopolitical bargains were still possible for Putin, unquote. But after the war started in eastern Ukraine, and particularly after the downing of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17, Bershidsky wrote that Putin's, quote, credibility was shot. Now, he goes on to say that, you know, a few things in detail that show what he feels is the effect of Russia's intervention in Ukraine on what he calls Putin's isolation, or, you know, his cloud on the world stage. Says, quote, Putin's isolation is evident in Russia's shrinking share of global arms sales and Putin's inability to broker a political situation in Syria, his failure to persuade Belarusian dictator Alexander Lukashenko to move toward a closer union, and the near lack of Chinese direct investment in Russia, unquote. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, those are interesting points because, I mean, Syria in some ways is seen as a success of Putin and of Russia in recent years. And certainly Russia has played up the idea that the West, by imposing sanctions on Russia, is pushing it into a better relationship with China and is kind of, you know, creating an alliance between China and Russia. But, you know, some analysts feel that that is a lopsided relationship, and the effects for Russia in terms of positives are hard to see. In terms of Belarus, also, I mean, in a way, I'd say, you know, the bad relations with the West certainly make Belarus kind of, they make it more important for Russia in terms of Putin needs to keep Belarus on his side, and it gives Belarus some kind of a greater freedom of movement, I think, even though they are under a lot of pressure from Russia, but gives Lukashenko a bit more freedom of movement to kind of balance things out and say, look, you know, you need me. So that's also, I think, what Bershidsky's saying. These are effects of the takeover of Crimea on Russia's ability to maneuver and ability to kind of thrive and succeed in the region and around the world. That's it for today. I'll be back next Monday, presumably with a guest this time. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thanks for listening.